You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello and welcome to Monday's edition of the Terrace Scottish Football Podcast. I am Duncan Mackay and I'm joined today by Craig Anderson.
Hi Duncan, how's it going?
Very well, very well. We're just all kicking off, isn't it? But it's not really. And it's just you today because life is difficult, life is hard at this point, and things get in the way, life gets in the way.
You're about to start a song like life is difficult, life is hard. It sounds like, you know, like a really deep Coldplay lyric or something, someone like that who's like tries to make these big deep songs. It sounded like you were dipping your toe into that particular songwriting ocean.
Just wait until I learn how to play piano and then it's definitely happening. This weekend we're going to be looking at the six games that took place in the Premiership. Some were more meaningful than others, and I think we're going to try and do them in order of meaningfulness and not start with a 6-0 scudding. First game, Kilmarnock 2, Ross County 2. How do you feel about that, Craig Anderson, now in the cold light of day, after 48 hours after the event?
So first of all, I think I was expecting a draw. I think I did the Patreon with Craig Fowler on Friday, and I kind of predicted either 1-1 or 2-2. I was pretty sure neither of those defences had it in them to keep a clean sheet. So it turned out right. And given that Kelly played quite poorly, it would have been very easy to lose that game, and losing the game would have been an absolute disaster. Drawing the game is not great, but it keeps, you know, Ross County are only a point ahead of us. Like, it's not, you know, it's not the end of the world. We've still got two home games, still got, you know, four chances to get something and try and propel ourselves ahead of them, and did pull a point further away from Hamilton. And all of these things are positives, but the downside, I mean, the fact that we played badly is in itself a downside, but kind of, I was chatting offline to a couple other Kelly fans and making the point that earlier in the season we would have lost games like this. Like, there's not a single game I can think of this season where Kelly have like stolen points, like as in, like, you know,
as in got away with get points above performance, I suppose.
Yeah. It's been a lot of the opposite. I mean, it was two games against St Johnstone at Rugby Park, leading 1-0, going into the kind of playing well. Ross Millen gets himself sent off, and we chuck away two goals in the last 10 minutes, including one like right at the death. We were 2-0 up against St Johnstone, managed to lose 3-2. Two games against Livingston where we chucked away like last minute goals. If we'd just taken a point in each of those games instead of, like, you know, maybe over pushing, which I think we did at times, then we'd be much better off. So in that respect, taking a point from this is a good chance. But when you lead twice, it's definitely a big missed opportunity, because I think I was looking at this and thinking, well, if we can win, then we play Dundee United the next home game. You could theoretically, you know, be like 4 points ahead of them, and almost kind of looking over, you know, almost kind of thinking within two games you could get rid of most of the worries. Whereas looking at it now, I'd be very surprised if it doesn't go to the last day.
Yeah, I think, certainly,
if we are to stay up, I think it will go to the last day. It's possible it could be out of our hands from that respect, like in terms of Catch and County, I mean, before then, but I don't think we're now going to be more than 3 points ahead of them going into the last game.
I would say that while watching Kilmarnock now under Tommy Wright, though, is a bit more enjoyable, though. There's clearly, obviously, the rival Lafferty, and we've reeled out the stats about his late in the season performances more than enough already on probably every podcast that since Alan Temple revealed it. But it just feels that there's more chance that Kelly stay in games because the front line is now looking a bit more threatening.
Yeah, I mean, he's just very much kind of gone, right, I want to play a 4-4-1-1 type shape after kind of the field experiment with a back three that he very quickly abandoned. Let's get a solid left-footed left-back, a solid right-footed right-back. Let's have someone with a left foot on the left, someone with a right foot on the right. And, you know, it's all these simple things, but managers don't always do it. And it has certainly brought, yeah, there's now a plan, an attack. So, you know, we're creating lots of chances and we're, you know, all sorts of different types of chances and we're scoring the goals as a result. The problem is fundamentally, like, we've got a midfield two who are clearly are and have been very good players, but lack dynamism and ages catching up with them. I think Dicker in particular, like, who I'm a massive fan of and I think has been underrated for a long time by Kelly fans. I think his legs are starting, he's really starting to get caught out with kind of pace in behind. On top of that, we've got a pretty poor defence. Like, the defenders are not great. And then you're immediately kind of on the back foot. And then you've got a goalkeeper that nobody has faith in, I think, would be a fair way of putting it.
I think that would be a very fair assessment given, I suppose, those two issues were clear as day in the two goals that you conceded the weekend. The first goal, I don't know who was meant to be tracking Michael Gardine at all. And then the second goal comes from a fairly lackluster shot that Doyle manages to put out for a corner. And then the marking at the corner isn't great either. Whereas the leading goal you score is a fantastic technique from Chris Burke. So it must be kind of frustrating in that sense that you're creating, amazing goals, but then conceding just slapdash nonsense.
Yeah, I mean, you can look at it, that first goal, and we'll be making a habit recently of scoring early. We scored early against County through there, which we still managed to lose. We scored in the first minute against Motherwell. So these are things that I think are coming from, right, you know, get out, get on top of them and make a really big start early on, which we've done in all those games. And you saw that, and County were struggling with it from the kickoff, and then Burke wasn't getting picked up at all, and then he rattles in a really lovely finish, and he comes up big in big moments, Burke, time and again. He almost won the game at the end as well with a kind of shot that nobody was expecting. But yeah, then it's a big high ball into the box. That's what I mean. County didn't really work for either of the goals, as much as they were definitely good value for the point. Like, they were the better team, if anything. The goals themselves, they didn't work for. It was a big, big long ball, and White, I thought it was White at first, and I was like, right, that's fair enough. You can get beaten there by White. And then I realised it's actually Billy Mackay outjumps Medley on the edge. And then Broadfoot, I can see what he's doing. He's in two minds because Gardine's coming towards him at a bit of pace. And I think he's thinking, look, I can easily make a tackle here, but bring him down, get sent off. Yeah. And you know, and so he kind of takes the lesser of two evils, but it just looks like he's kind of ushering Gardine through to shoot, which, and you know, 10 yards from goal is not a good idea, and he does score. And then, yeah, you work back into a lead, and Mitch Pinnock's been a bit of a revelation under Wright.
That was one of my notes, including that outrageous piece of skill.
You can scroll through it from this morning. There's a video of it, and it was, well, I'd said at the time, it was like reminiscent of Greg Stewart when he was kind of at his peak. But the difference was with Greg Stewart, he then like would deliver a cross and find somebody for a goal, and Mitch Pinnock like smashed it straight at the goalkeeper. But for the goal itself, it was a nice bit of skill, a nice bit of close control to get himself the shooting opportunity. And much like when I've talked about Lafferty doing it, and maybe it's starting to rub off, it's better sometimes to take a bad shot but take it early, and you just catch the keeper out, and that's what you saw. It went straight through Leblanc. He should obviously have done better. And again, at that point, you're like, right, well, we've, and this is what, I mean, it's what happened in the Motherwell game. We went ahead, we chucked it, but then we got ourselves back ahead and we took control of the game. And I was hoping the same was going to happen again, but Kelly were awful from the point we went 2-1 up all the way through, probably. I mean, all the way through the 70 minutes, maybe. So through conceding the goal, you could see the goal coming a mile away. As you said, Doyle should, it's always hard to criticize a goal, right? He made a save, but that free kick was not exactly flying towards goal. He could have not conceded a corner. I don't think he needed to save it at all, but if he wants to do something with it, parry it out and away to the side or something, he puts it behind for a corner, and from that corner, I think they highlighted on Sports Scene, there was maybe a wee nudge, but not anything like enough for a foul. And it's far too easy, and I think it's Medley again who loses the man. And Medley's a funny one. He said he reminds me of Stuart Finlay when he came in at Kelly, which is that he has a lot of raw abilities and he's quick and he reads the game quite well and all of that stuff. But fundamentally, as a defender, he's got a lot to learn, which is why he's playing for us, I think.
Yeah.
And you've got that balance because he does offer. I mean, he strides out of defence really well and he opens things up, and there are benefits to having him there. But at the same time, he's costing a lot of goals at the moment. And where do you stand on that? Because he had another moment earlier in the game where he got caught on the ball, which nearly led to a kind of breakaway as well. So all in all, yeah, I think massive worries at the defensive end, but at least we are scoring the goals, which we weren't doing before. So it's kind of there's positive and negatives there.
Yeah, I think that from a club that has been relegated pretty recently, that is the concern, is that when you're not scoring the other goals as well. Like, you know, it's fine to be, you know, if you're down that end, you kind of expect to be losing cheap goals. But it's if you're not able to do it, if you concede and then that's you out the game, basically, because you know that it's going to be really difficult. So I suppose that's the one joy. And again, I still feel in my gut that Kelly are a better bet to finish 10th than County, just because I find County just very streaky. And I just, yeah, I think that... I'm not entirely convinced that the motivational process that John Hughes goes through is actually what they need at this stage. I think they need just be better organised.
Yeah, and I think they have been a bit of a thorn in Kelly's side. Like, they've played well against Kelly most of the games this season, the exception being the one they lost to Rugby Park. And I think I don't know if we've just the right type of team for them in terms of, you know, not very good for a start, which will probably help, but they've certainly had a lot, they've looked a lot better against us than when I've seen them against other teams. And that's the hope I'm taking, that, you know, that maybe they go into these subsequent matches and can't replicate that. Because I think if they play like that, they will pick up wins before the end of the season. But if they play like they played in the previous weeks, like if they played like they played against Inverness the Friday night before, I think they would lose the remaining four games, which is what I'm hoping for. But I think that there's some. I think the front. I think he's got the team in terms of the attack right, is my feeling. Like, I think as much as Jordan White takes a bit of stick, probably some of it deserved, he's a good big target, and Mackay gets in about the flick on
field, especially for these final games, like where. You with those two, at least you know they're going to be in the game, like. Mercurial Ollie Shaw, like, you know, like that can't force his way into a game, I suppose, in the same way that White can, just by virtue of lumping the ball up towards his head.
And Gardine is always dangerous. He's ever since he played quite poorly for us, every time he comes back to Rugby Park, he's excellent, which he just does a power of running. Their defence is not very good, and their goalkeeper's not very good, so they've probably got pretty similar problems to what Kilmarnock do. I think there are three bad teams, and I think actually we'll go on and talk. I think there is actually a fourth bad team in the league, but they have something that none of the other bottom three clubs do, which is a very good goalkeeper. And that's where we kind of stand, I think. And so, yeah, it was probably a a better point for County than Kelly, but at the same time, I think County maybe slightly disappointed they didn't win.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair, and I think that's the kind of the impression both managers gave after the in their post match comments, that they both felt they could win, but also weren't utterly devastated to leave with a point. I suppose we need move on to the other team that's currently sitting 12th in the league, and that's Hamilton. They were defeated 1-0 by Dundee United at home. Mark McNulty freebie, basically, essentially. You know, there was I was quite looking forward to this because I'd heard Brian Rice before I'd watched the highlights, you know, and his reaction, and he was saying, you know, if we have got performance like that 3-4 times a season, we wouldn't be where we are. And I kind of then watched the highlights and thought, that's more worrying, because I didn't feel that there was any, they didn't create that many clear-cut opportunities, and there was a lot of effort. But I come to expect that from Hamilton. I didn't see the the difference between that and then Hamilton being quite unlucky against a lot of other teams.
Yeah, I think the fourth team I was saying that weren't very good, I think, is Dundee United. I think they have some good players, but fundamentally, and you saw it again in that game, if they don't have Benjamin Segrist this season, I think they are 10 points worth off, maybe more.
Potentially more, yeah.
And would be right in that.
It's probably covering a multitude of sins.
Right in that mix. But there's no doubt for me since January they've been a much better team. But what they've actually struggled to do is get wins. They've had a lot of draws. And then it's a fine line, because your draws either turn into defeats or they turn into wins. And this turned into a defeat, a game that they probably will feel they should have got more from, and it's not a time of the season for hard luck stories. I guess it's not like, you know, nearly you know, when it's in August and you're like, oh, we played well and we could have, you know, we should have won, you kind of go, all right, okay, well, next week's there. But when you've got four games left, it's very much like that no longer becomes useful in any way.
Yeah, it's that thing when you get excited by managers talking about you know, what I'm looking at, what I prefer seeing was the performance level rather than the result. This time of the season, I would take the lowest performance going, as long as you get the result, because ultimately that's all that matters at the moment. And that would be a slightly concerning for Aki's viewpoint.
Yeah, the goal for me, the problem I have with it is I don't mind teams playing about at the back, and I think like people get too worked up about it, because most of the time it doesn't lead to a mistake, and what it does is it draws the other team out. You create openings, you know, you're a bit patient. They get frustrated, you kind of pick them apart and stuff like that. So I don't mind that. If I was a manager, I think I would always be saying to my team is, if you have one scary moment in a move, that's plenty. Get rid of it and think about it next time. Because what happens is, you know, one bit of sloppiness like naturally leads on to another one, because then so Hamilton nearly gets caught in possession, and he plays the pass on, but then everything's a wee bit rushed from that point, and then the pass goes back to Gourlay and he's under more pressure than he should be. I think as soon as Hamilton gets worried, he plays it infield. I can't remember who, is it Martin? Maybe it goes infield too. He just needs to empty it. Instead, he plays a pass none of that is to excuse Gourlay for what is an abysmal kick, but you almost can see these things coming sometimes. And I think, you know, yeah, it's always for me, it's like, play it about, but if you get away with one, don't take a further chance. And I think they took a further chance and they were punished for it. And it's a lovely piece of quick thinking from Fuchs to send McNulty away, and it's a nice finish, isn't it? And they'll be pleased with that goal, Dundee United. It did somewhat feel like it was the only way they were going to score, was with a mistake.
Yeah. Yeah, they didn't. They really didn't offer, well, judging by the highlights anyway, they really didn't seem to offer that much, despite, you know, despite having aspirations of being a top six club, I suppose.
Yeah, I don't buy this of, because they're just newly promoted, they can be happy with, you know, just staying up. They're not Livingston, they're not Hamilton, they're not Ross County coming into the league. They're still Dundee United. They're still probably sitting with a top six budget. So you know, finishing seventh, eighth, ninth, whatever it is fine. It's not a bad season, because they do have to adapt, you know, to the Premiership. There's a whole ton of things going on. And the worst thing possible for that club would have been to have gone back down after all the money invested in coming back up. But it doesn't make it a good season. I don't think it's by any stretch a good season for them. They should be higher up. They have some players who should be at a higher level, but they've got some players who are not up to it as well. And I think they'll be one of the teams that can kind of take away the season and be like, yeah, it was fine. But I would hope that Mellon has just decided, right, I'm just going to make sure we don't get relegated this season, and then he's going to build. Because if I was a Dundee United fan, I don't think I would want to watch that team play like that again next season. You would be looking for new, more exciting players to come in.
Yeah, and you're winning, but just by the skin of your teeth a lot as well. I mean, that was, you know, that they didn't look all that impressive against a struggling League One side in Partick Thistle, and got very, very fortunate to get out of that. And, you know, really probably shouldn't be in, or they should at least have been going into extra time at the very least on that. And then again, you know, it's another on a plate. Chance that gives them a chance to beat Hamilton. But yeah, they didn't really offer much beyond that. Again, you know, we talked about referenced Segrist being excellent, but again, there wasn't anything that was truly remarkable. It's just it's probably just telling the standard of bottom six goalkeepers this season, I think, that he looks good. He looks impressive because he does a lot of the basics very well.
He makes saves. He actually,
they don't go through him. Yeah, basically,
they're running through things like that. Yeah, I think that would be the talking to the goalkeeper situation. I think that would maybe be the biggest worry for Hamilton as well. It looks like Fulton's probably not going to be back this season. He's by no means an amazing goalkeeper, but he did sneak into the boys' top 12 when they did it. And Gourlay, I think, is as a backup for Hamilton Accies, is what you expect as a backup for a team that's probably got one of the lowest budgets in the league. He's probably a competent goalkeeper, but I don't think he's going to save you any. You know, he's not going to win you points and stuff like that. And you could really be doing, like when Hamilton Accies stayed up those seasons, the first team, and they always had Thomas Cherney, and he would win them.
I suppose Cherney is almost a Segrist for the new generation.
And they do seem to be falling apart a wee bit in terms of having players available. They seem to be losing players, Hamilton, at the worst possible time. For them, they'll maybe, I don't buy it, kind of, oh, you don't want to be in the cup and all that, but they don't have, you know, Kelly have got the cup, and we'll be hoping for a decent run with the draw that we've got. Accies and County don't have to worry about the cup, so they have an extra wee period to maybe get some players back to fitness and stuff like that, but it will be interesting. Yeah, I am more confident of them not catching us than I was probably a couple of weeks ago, but they're only 2 points behind. It's not like, you know, it's not a big gap. Like, they could.
But I suppose they're going to go into, they're going to have a week off and going to be, or 10 days off. But they're going to be dwelling on the fact that that's probably one of their best, their manager's come out and said that was their best performance of the season. That would be slightly alarming, I think. And then I suppose we should conclude the roundup on the bottom six on Saturday. Motherwell beat St Mirren in 1-0, and what seemed like a pretty entertaining game all told. But again, nothing to play for. So kind of that, you know, the Motherwell are pretty much safe. You know, St Mirren are like, it was just a game, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think like Motherwell, if they'd lost this game, they would have looked like they were in a bit of trouble, and they would have had a worry. But I think it would have surprised me if they hadn't at least won one game after the split. Now I'm pretty happy to call them safe. I think it is between three and
something miraculous has to, something really bad has to happen now for Motherwell.
Yeah, they would need to lose all four games in a combination of results as well in the other one. So I'm happy to give them the safety. And I think Alexander deserves credit for coming in. As much as I think he seems like a strange man, he's come in and steadied the ship. I'm pretty sure Robinson would have kept them up anyway, to be honest. But they steadied the ship. He's got them the victories they needed. And they can now look at building for next season. They'll probably have to replace quite a few of the players. I assume Gallagher will not be there. I assume Campbell will not be there. possibly some of the others as well. And so they have to rebuild, but they've got the freedom to do that, and they've probably got a decent enough budget. And you know that, I think that their playing budget this year was as high as it had been for many years.
And they also now have a manager who is used to shopping in that market. The Motherwell seem to do a lot of their work in.
Yeah, so I think they'll be happy enough that, you know, they've done the job. It was a nice, it was the type of goal you expect from Cole. You know, he just pinches one. It was a bit lucky, but, you know, much like his dad, they seem to just be in the right. He seems to be in the right place.
You've got to be there to score them.
And I was going to say a good save from Kelly from the penalty.
But it wasn't really,
to be honest, it's not an awful penalty. What did you make of the penalty itself? Like,
I think it was a penalty. I think that O'Donnell doesn't get his feet right. He doesn't set himself properly, and so there. He as soon as he commits that leg, it's all over. I mean, it's not the most outrageous foul that's been given this season, but I think it's just he could tell that when you saw it in the replays, he for some reason got his body slightly confused, and he wasn't sure whether he wanted to show him down the sideline or have him come in, and kind of got caught between them, and then that was where the leg sort of reaches out to try and take him down, take the ball away. Yeah,
it was like he was kind of falling backwards, but it does worry you if he's defending Dylan Connolly like that as to what he'll be up to when he comes up against like Raheem Sterling or something in the summer. But I think
Nathan Patterson's going to be taking his journal.
I think they should have had another penalty before that St Mirren as well. I think it was a pretty clear handball from Crawford. You could see why it wasn't given, because his body literally completely obscured. Was it Kevin Clancy's view?
Yeah.
Of it? So you can see why it wasn't given, but that probably should have been a pen. But if McGrath's going to hit penalties like that, they could have had five penalties and it would still have been a clean sheet. St Mirren, I think it's natural. I always think when a team gets so close to the top six, they fall away, because it's like they're deflated, and I don't expect them to take too many more points before this. You know, they'll win a couple of games, but I wouldn't be surprised if they, you know, ended up finishing eighth or ninth now.
I do find it odd that there's some, I think because St Bernard put so much, so many balls in a basket in terms of reaching top six, that it's naturally going to be quite devastating. And I don't think that Goodwin's the sort of manager that can then fake it, I suppose, and come in and be like, well, that's actually what's important now is we win the next five games and you'll give us, like, you know, I just don't think that is where they're going. And, you know, I think if you're St Mirren, I think it's time to start looking at what other youth prospects you can start to blood and sell to Hibs next season and stuff like that. And just start thinking ahead to next season, because they are very close to making that leap into the top six. I don't like, but again, at the same time, until they do it, it's going to be a perennial problem for them, because they'll be not seen as bottlers, but you know, I'll be interested to see who Goodwin goes into the market for this summer, because I think they need that. I think they do need some sort of steeliness or experience type thing, but again, I don't know where they're going to get that from.
But then they signed Brophy, so they are shopping in a market of, like, obviously it didn't work out because he got injured, but they obviously do have the money to chuck about there, because a player, you know, like that. So they do have the money there behind them, and I think you can see them building something, but it's very easy for these things to fall apart, and especially when, you know, you are always susceptible to losing players. Any club kind of outside, any club especially outside the kind of, you know, big city teams, and you can lose a player at any point for an extra 200 quid, and it's always part of it. It's very hard to build anything, so I'm always wary of making like long term predictions, because, you know, a couple injuries and they could be, you know, back down in the relegation scrap next season. But they have been an impressive team on the whole this season. I think once they shrugged off the kind of COVID issues at the start of the season. They really put a run together. And it's clear to me Goodwin knows what he's doing. He may not be a manager for a top club at any time ever. I think he probably won't be. I think he's maybe never going to win enough games to be a kind of, you know, top level manager or a manager of a top club. But for St Mirren, I think he's a perfect manager, and I expect them to continue to do well. But as I say, you never do know.
Yeah. Well, that concludes the low road in the Premiership. We should probably go to the top six now. And I suppose McDermott Park is the next place to go, because Aberdeen keeping the fight for third place alive with a 1-0 win over St Johnstone. I mean, not a gripping game by the looks of it, but that would be difficult for anyone to surmise ahead of time that two turgid teams that are sometimes struggling to score might not turn out a goal fest.
I think you could have told me that was a St Johnstone Aberdeen game from earlier in the season just being replayed, and you could almost have just accepted it. St Johnstone seemed to have got over that thing of kind of playing quite well, building up and not really taking their chances. Over the last few weeks, they'd obviously, to get themselves into the top six, they'd put a run together, but it's kind of came back again there. They played really well, but they just, you know, they didn't get it over the line, and then Aberdeen, you know, scored a goal, maybe not quite out of nothing, like it wasn't like they weren't in the game at all, but were probably second best up until that point, but then St Johnstone didn't trouble them enough subsequently. And Aberdeen are, for all their flaws, they are generally good at seeing out games, and you saw that from them
I think. Yeah, I think they again, just with St Johnstone, it feels like obviously now we're on to the fourth time that clubs are playing each other, that there is a kind of a lack of sometimes new things to say, but Aberdeen, I think it doesn't sum up the season in microcosm, but I think it says quite a lot. I just remember one point, because I paused it, and it was McGinn's cross in the first half, and he's looking for Hornby, and I paused it just at the point, and McGinn's out of shot, but what you can see is there are seven St Johnstone players plus goalkeeper, and only Hornby in the box, and then there's two Aberdeen players, you know, outside the box, and you that nearly surmised, like, if you've not. Like, no wonder you're struggling to score goals. If your players that are meant to be supporting the striker are already writing off the first chance coming, you know, they're looking for the second ball, but they're not pressing the space either enough to make it so that defenders or midfielders that are back will make mistakes.
Well, you look at that, like that situation you mentioned, and it's like, well, what constitutes a successful piece of play from Niall McGinn at that point? He's clearly not going to get a goal out of Hornby, because he's the only striker surrounded by, you know, it's not going to happen. So then it is like, well, it's demoralising as an attacking player, and that's where the confidence goes. Because then you look up and you're like, well, what am I doing here? What's the point?
Why am I chasing 60-yard balls? Yeah.
And that's when you start seeing wingers turning around and passing it to the fullbacks and stuff, and that's what annoys people. And I think that's been the problem with Aberdeen for a while, was like, they've not been a team that take chances. And I don't mean as in the way St Johnstone didn't take chances. They're not a team that takes risks. Mm-hmm. And that gets them, you know, they grind out a lot of victories, but it costs them in the big games, because to beat a better team, you usually, you know, it's kind of nothing ventured, nothing gained. You need to sometimes take a risk, and it can be a calculated risk to try and create a chance to try and make something happen. Otherwise, you're just constantly relying on mistakes and set pieces, and that's what they've done a lot, and that's why they consistently, despite what I was always say, played, they generally played all right, or a lot of the games against Celtic, for example, they played all right, but they didn't get results inconsistently, because unlike other teams, Celtic didn't at the time didn't make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're kind of like playing about in front of them, and it'd be interesting to see how Glass addresses that. As I say, I think it's going to be not quite a disaster. I think their performances will be much worse under Glass overall, but maybe he'll add a bit of variability to them. So, you know, yeah, maybe they'll probably perform worse overall, but maybe they'll, you know, get the wins they weren't getting before, and that could win them a cup or get them through in Europe, because they're a bit less reliable and predictable in a bad way.
I think you're right, but I think that there might still be further low points to come before there's a point of recovery. You know, we've seen that a lot, but that it can be difficult for fans to buy into that narrative that you're like to arrest the slide. Sometimes you've got to go further down. I think we should talk about the quality of Matthew Kennedy's pass for Hayes's goal. I mean, that was terrific. I think that I love that sort of punched pass, if that makes sense. Like it feels like there's backspin on it, but there's not quite. I think Rooney should have done better. I think when you've got two men back, that Hayes has not been prolific this season and doesn't necessarily have the same pace that he once did. It was he kind of knew what he was wanting to do, so it should have been defended better. But I will also give credit for just them not expecting to be split by such a good ball.
I think that's sometimes the thing when you're talking, for example, you're talking about Rooney and could he play for Scotland and stuff like that. It's like, well, that type of defending is probably absolutely acceptable a lot of the times because, as you say, there are a few players in the Premiership who can play that type of pass. So what that means is he can actually steal that extra yard in the other direction so that when usually whoever the winger is in the Scottish Premiership like scuffs the pass 5 yards to the other centre half, he's actually already setting away on a counter.
Yeah.
Or he's well positioned for the next piece of play. But what you sometimes find is that as the quality of the players go up, all of a sudden he's having to learn, well, actually, I can't be here. So it's going to be interesting as a player as he develops going forward if he goes to play at a higher level, which I have a feeling he will because of the physical attributes he has. As to how he copes with that, because I think, he was playing, League Two with Queen's Park to begin with, and then, played a bit of Championship, maybe League One as well, and then this is his first season, in the Premiership, and he's had a lot of praise, but there are negatives to his game, and I think you maybe saw one of them that defensively he's still got some way to go. I think Bryson should have closed down Kennedy better in the first place. I think it was a bit of a powder puff effort. It almost felt like I'm not going to take a foul here. I talked about Broadfoot waving guarding past him. It's much less acceptable to do that when the team's on a counter attack and you're outside the box and you're only going to get booked for it. I think just take the yellow. But then, the quality, that's me being negative and picking out the defending errors, but the quality of the pass is tremendous. And his times he's run really well and it's a really nice finish. It's a perfect, I know it's everything we talked about. And it's again the same thing. Hayes does take the risk by making the run. He goes beyond. He goes beyond because Rooney going the other way is always going to cause you problems. So you are taking a risk, but he makes the run. And yeah, Kennedy, it's a pass that deserves the goal.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the only other things to add from that is that St. Johnson did have chances. Kane should have buried that. I mean, I think we've all said our piece on Chris Kane over the years, but again, that's going to I don't know if there's any point in saying it, but if St. Johnson wants to go further, you need to have someone that's a bit more clinical than that. And even Ali McCann's chance late on, a better striker off the ball would have got the equaliser in that part.
Yeah, I think Kane, the thing with me and Kane is always like, you can see how much he brings to the team. And you saw in the cup final, you saw in the semi-final against Hibs as well, how much he can do for the team. But again, then you see, well, that's why he's at St. Johnstone and it's why he's unconvincing for St. Johnstone at times is because, well, he is a striker and he doesn't score enough goals. There's always that balance. But yeah, I think they will probably not be able to upgrade on him, if you know what I mean, because he's probably for what Davidson wants from his striker, he offers so much.
Yeah.
But the type of player that offers a wee bit extra they can't afford. So it's always that kind of, it's that striving for perfection. So Davidson will just be hoping he can maybe make him better at the things he's not good at.
Yeah, sharpen is the tools that are not quite as used as often. But yeah, we should then penultimate game of the weekend. The team that Aberdeen are challenging for third, Hibs, went down 2-1 to the champions Rangers at Ibrox on a Sunday televised game for reasons that I'm not quite sure why. It was Sunday at 3 o'clock. Was it just the Rangers could potentially have been playing in Europe?
I thought it was just because Celtic were at home.
I know there's not fans there,
but yeah. I assumed that was why. So I guess I can ask you a couple of questions on Hibs on this. How did you feel? My view was that Hibs were a wee bit too passive to start with. Was that what your take was? Or
Yeah, they were too passive for two periods that were a bit far too long in the game. Especially the joy that Hibs were having on the right hand side. Barisic had possibly his worst game he's had in a Rangers jersey. I've got an encyclopedic knowledge of every appearance he's made, but Boyle and Cadden really gave him a hard time. But there wasn't, when there was such an obvious weakness in how Rangers were playing on yesterday, because the left-hand side, or Hibs left-hand side, was a bit of a ding-dong between Doig and Patterson. That was really entertaining, but they were cancelling each other out. That Hibs were not focusing on that weakness that Rangers had. So yeah, especially the second goal is a prime example of that, in terms of just sitting off too much, being a bit too passive with the Rangers midfield. Rangers midfield were able to carry the ball far too long, sometimes 20, 30, 40 yards through the pitch, which is, I can understand what Jack Ross was trying to do. He was trying to stay in the game and make it, difficult for Rangers once it got to a certain part. But, I mean, that's the fourth time, and, we've been relatively good against Rangers, but we've only taken 1 point out of 12 in the end. And that's slightly disappointing. I mean, again, there's a possibility the Rangers go unbeaten this season, so you can't, maybe it's a bit churlish, but I think there have been certain moments when they've been there for the taking, but this is not a swashbuckling Hibs side of previous. But then again, they've not taken a hiding that much of Rangers this season either. So
yeah, I always get like a bit of a McInnes vibe off of Ross sometimes, and that he's safe. He's sometimes too safe. And I think, like, you look at the first goal, that whole move should be played about 15 yards further up the park, at which point Aribo doesn't get the goal because he gets the ball 25 yards from goal instead of like where he does. But you can understand, you can see what the positives of like inviting Rangers on are, because I think it's where they can be got at. You saw the pace in behind. You said about Barisic, Goldson didn't necessarily look too clever at times as well. And Boyle probably has a couple of really good chances, and Hibs are very good on the counter and do pick the passes well. And on another day, perhaps, it's an Ivan Sproul day where you swap in Martin Boyle, because you could see how open Rangers were even when they were 1-0 up.
There was, two, three pretty good chances at the end of the first half. But if you don't take those chances against Rangers, then, frankly, you're not going to get a chance. And okay, yeah, the second goal kind of killed it, but and even when Hibs got one back, I didn't really feel like we were going to, even with the disallowed goal later on, like it didn't feel like Hibs were really, they were in the game, but it didn't feel like they were in the contest, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's kind of the view I got. And don't get me wrong, I think if they can keep a hold of a couple of Irvin in particular, I think Hibs will be, I think they'll finish third this season, but it might be quite tight because it's Jack Ross, big games. They've got a big game against Aberdeen. The record against Aberdeen's not great, all of that stuff.
Yeah.
And you do, as much as Aberdeen are bad in these games, you do just sometimes fancy them to, pick up a win against the Rangers or something, or Celtic. Or
I think Aberdeen is going to be a curious one. I think they might go one. It could go one of two ways, it could go many ways, actually. But you do wonder how. I mean, there's nothing to say that Aberdeen might not win. I think it's highly unlikely, but they could theoretically win the last four games now that they're unleashed under, then they're all ready to impress, and the good time vibes are back. But again, you could easily see them losing the next four games as well.
But what I was going to say is, regardless of what happens this season, I would have Hibs as hugely strong favourites for third next season, because I think they've got consistency with the manager. I think it'll work in their favour how it went with Ross at Sunderland, even though every other manager at Sunderland's not done anything different to he has. He will almost certainly still be Hibs manager for the entirety of next season, and
I would agree. The only difference it might be is how Europe pans out. But again, if it goes really well or really badly, I agree with that. And I think part of the key of Hibbs's settledness, I suppose, more than anything, and someone that seems to be not being getting a great deal of praise or anything like that, you know, which I found was slightly odd over the last week when we had the AGM and stuff like that, has been the recruitment done by Graham Matthey. It does seem quite odd that he seems kind of excluded from that when it's clear that he is identifying quite a lot of these players that are coming to the club.
Yeah, and he did a podcast with Joel about this time last year, I guess, or it was certainly during the lockdown. And he had been linked with the sporting director or whatever the job is at Kelly.
Because he's an Ayrshire guy, yeah.
And he's kind of got some connections. His dad was heavily associated with Kelly. And at that point, I think it's his dad anyway, I'm sure it is. But at that point, listening to him doing that podcast with Joel, I was like, you could definitely tell it was kind of one that got away kind of thing. He's a very impressive sounding person, and you can imagine him convincing players to sign for Hibs as well. And Ross probably is cut from the same cloth, and they have recruited very well.
There's been far fewer duds than a number of teams, and Hibs's general average duffness signing that goes on normally.
I think there's a lot of positive from Hibs, and I think you could see some of what Ross is trying to do with the team. I feel it was a missed opportunity. The header from this bit I thought was excellent. Goldson maybe gets caught a wee bit out by him, but I don't think you expect a player to be able to run across the front post and do that.
Yeah. No, Nisbet looked a completely different player from the Nisbet that played on Monday night against Queen of the South, where it was kind of like, oh, you're here. I think he was very, very much up for it and very involved. And sometimes he just isn't. I think that's just part of his game. And again, on the Rangers side, there's, I don't think there's anything new to be said. You know, that they've done what they've always done. I think, to be honest, that would be my slight concern, was the Golson Barisic space, that access would be something that if you're a Celtic, you would probably be looking to exploit again if you've got if James Forrest is fit, because it seemed that they really did struggle with Boyle's pace and any sort of overload in that area.
I'm pretty sure Celtic will win one of the remaining two games against them. I don't know which one. And so I feel like it's going to be next week. I think Rangers will probably end up unbeaten, but they'll not win the cup, and kind of, it'll almost feel a wee bit of an anticlimax for them.
It'd be quite funny if Celtic knock them out and then also do not win.
And also lose. That's what we're all hoping for. Yeah.
You get a family final,
it's so hard to... We've waxed lyrical about them. They're an excellent team. They're one of the best, definitely over the last decade or so, Scottish teams. Probably the only team you'd say are definitely better than them are the Celtic Invincibles. So of course they have the opportunity to actually match, I think, still that record if they win the last four games. So they are a very good team. It's just, as you say, run out of things to say about them, and especially in a game like this, which was a bit, it does have stuff riding on it, but it's hardly like high stakes the way it would be in other seasons.
Yeah, absolutely.
With a crowd there and with a bit earlier in the season and stuff like that.
Well, I imagine, I don't really want to imagine what yesterday's game would have been like with a crowd following the news on Friday. So we'll skip on to skip over to that, and then to Saturday's game, Celtic absolutely drubbing Livingston 6-0. Again, another one game where it's not that much to say about it. I know it's going to sound bad, and Celtic fans, they don't listen to us anyway, but that, you know, that that you see your performance like this, but it kind of feels a lot like Hearts' win on Friday as well. It's all a bit after the Lord Mayor show. It's like, yeah, I mean, where was this performance in November? Where was this performance in October? Like, and again, I'm not entirely sure how much that was down to how good Celtic were versus how much of a really bad day Livy had as well, because they just didn't do the fundamentals that make them Livingston.
Yeah, I mean, it had the feel of a training game. Like it was all slow. It was very easy for Celtic to pick apart Livingston, and it was just that it makes it so hard to engage with the game, to be honest. Because I'm like, if I know Celtic have won 6-0 and I sit down and I see like that from Livingston, I'm like, why am I even bothering to watch this? And it's
weird because there are sometimes 6-0s that Celtic have put on in the past where actually you feel for the other side, because actually it's just, they've just been sliced like, you know, a butter through knife sort of thing, that Celtic have been so good. But I didn't think, I know it sound ungrateful, but you know, I don't think Celtic really had to work that hard for the 6-0.
Nah, and Livingston is a worry. Now, after that big run that they went on when Martindale took over, the last 10 games is 6 defeats and only 2 wins. And they'll have a few worries, and one of those wins was against Wraith after extra time as well. So
and that's him with keeping a settled side as well. That was about fourth game in a row that they've played the same starting 11. And again, is it just a case of, for Livingston, it's all just about trying to get through to the summer and do more recruitment?
But as much as that, you know, there's a story of whether they might or might not get a license for Europe, you'd think like fifth place is a big target. You know, playing in Europe is still something that you want to try and do, and I'm pretty sure every Scottish team targets that, you know, as a possibility, as a way of potentially getting some revenue, but also kind of in normal times attracting fans along, because it's a bit of a different game, and also just, you know, raising your profile as a club.
I think for Livingston, you know, if a good run in Europe could be, again, it could be a bit of a game changer for them. You want to say like, you know, that just by, you've seen it, that there is a what's the term, I can't remember, but you basically every time that that you're in Europe, like, you add to the inequality that exists. You've seen that, you know, in a lot of, like, it's happened in Luxembourg. I think there's that club that, because they went on one run, it's just basically meant they're topping money up the whole time because they keep going in Europe. And you can kind of similar to Dundalk in the League of Ireland as well. I suppose that there is, for Livy, if they use that money wisely, if they were to make it, just get through one round, would be actually, might be able to pay for things like a youth development academy and things like that.
Yeah. Beyond that, a couple of things I noted from Celtic. I think Forrest, you saw what he can offer, you know, and I think Rangers would have won the league regardless, but I think Celtic would have been much closer if Forrest had been available. They've just never really replaced that directness and that, you know, on the right hand side, you're someone who runs at defenders and consistently runs at defenders and doesn't give them a break. It's not like, you know, you've got players, everyone's got players like Frimpong, that he ran at defenders. Forrest, it was like every time he gets the ball, he just goes at folk and and he scores a lot of goals as well.
But also, like, his directness was kind of a zigzag, if that makes sense. Well, so it's not, Frimpong was a bit like, I'm very fast and I'm going to run directly at you. Whereas Forrest is, runs were more angled, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and so it's a worry for me, certainly. I would very much like to have him in the Scotland squad for the summer. So I'm hoping that the injury was just a precaution, and that he's still fit. And then El Yunusi was two fantastic goals. They were the highlight of the game for me. They both finishes.
I think he's a terrific player. But again, it's trying to work out what Celtic are trying to do here, because I think they've been cost, like, is it 6 or 12 million? I can't remember if they want to sign him. So
he's not worth it either.
Yeah, he's not worth those sums. But at the same time, why are you playing him to inflate his goal reel for another club? Like, it's all, and the same with, I mean, I don't think Ralston's going to be your future right back, but I'd much rather be playing him than an Everton loanee as well. Just a very odd way the club itself has just been run very oddly at the moment, I think, and that kind of, everything sums it up, and especially, you know, the leak about approaching Howe, and then Howe's not, maybe not into it as much and stuff like that. It just, again, everything Celtic do seem to be just walking into more disaster.
Yeah, I think they need to just get to the summer and get, you know, the new guy in and the new CEO in, and then everything from there, because they need a big overhaul.
I think even then it's going to be too late, but for trying to do anything next year, but c'est la vie. Right, anyway, thank you very much. That's us. I've done the six games. We are about to go and record a Patreon. The guys will be back on Thursday with another show. Don't know what that will be. Again, on the Patreon, that's patreon.com/terracepodcast. There is a podcast a day going up at the moment. There's lots of interesting stuff. I think today's one was a rewatching of the Queen of the South Aberdeen semi-final, which was a horror show for Aberdeen fans. So I think that'll probably be quite a fun listen. But yes, thank you very much for your time, Craig Anderson.
Thank you, Duncan.
And we'll all see you later on. Take care. Stay safe. Stay safe. I keep saying that, I'm getting it wrong. Stay safe and take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.